After decades of being stuck in development hell, The Flash has finally released in theaters. So let's talk spoilers. Hi, my name is Sean, and I love to talk about movies and TV way too much. With that in mind, go ahead and join me down below in the comment section. Let me know what you thought about The Flash. This is a spoiler review. Feel free to spoil away down below in the comment section. No need for a spoiler warning. And this movie turned out to be way more polarizing than I was expecting after I first watched it. So I'm very curious to see what the general consensus is about the film after opening weekend. I don't really even know what to expect in the comment section, because I just feel like people have such wildly different reactions to this film. All that said, I got chapter markers down below so you can skip ahead to whichever thing you want to hear me talk about. I'm going to try and dive into all of it, tackle it from all the different directions. If you don't want to sit here for as long as this video is, these spoiler reviews of mine tend to be like 90 minutes long, so you can just go ahead and skip to whatever you want to hear. With that said, let's go ahead and get started with my thoughts on the movie after watching it a second time. So I first watched the movie a week and a half ago, and at the point in time I watched it the first time, the general hype for the movie was really good. Just there was a lot of just general excitement for the film. There was some early buzz about it being really great, having some flaws, but being really good, though some of the CGI wasn't great. I went into it, I saw it with my neighbor as well as a fan of the YouTube channel, and all three of us seemed to have a great time with the movie. Very positive experience. Our theater was going nuts. There was a lot of clapping throughout the movie, hooting and hollering during some of Michael Keaton's classic lines. And then over the week and a half since then, some of the hype for the movie seems to have had like this pretty dramatic whiplash, to where some of the cameos leaked onto the internet and people like really had a, weren't having any of it. The buzz surrounding the CGI dramatically dampened some of the hype. And just in general, it seemed like there's a real big shift in the buzz surrounding the film. So I watched it again last night. Very different audience, opening night crowd. And I still had a lot of fun with it. I think I left the theater the first time I watched it like, man, that was really cool. And so I was like way up here. By the time I did my review for it, it kind of like dampened just a little bit of like, okay, yeah, the CGI really was a problem. And maybe there's a couple little bumps here and there that I didn't think worked all that well. But in general, still really dug the film. And after watching it a second time, I think that's not much really changed from where I landed in my review that I posted. It was like, I thought it was really funny. I was bought into the Barry's journey that he's on, the motivation for why he changes things. I liked this DCEU spin on Flashpoint, to where it's got a lot of the beats and it has the idea of Flashpoint, but it's not a direct adaptation. It is very much trying to tie into the DC timeline as well as doing this multiverse experience. And so that kind of has a different flavor to it. And just in general, especially watching some of the tweets coming out after last night, I'm really surprised at how polarizing the film is. There's some people that just said the story was a total mess. It didn't work for me at all. And that's surprising to me. I could get people, like, if the nostalgia really works, being way up there, kind of like me, and I can get some people being like, hey, it was a lot of fun, but, you know, it maybe was trying a little bit too hard with the humor, maybe a few too many cameos, maybe some cameos in poor taste, but, like, I could see this, but it's more like this. Like, it's all from the top to the bottom. It's just surprising to me. Like, I don't really get where some of the people that just really didn't like it, I was on just such a different vibe from them with this film, especially on a story level of just like very much being on this journey with Barry, what they were doing, what they were exploring with the lesson that he's learning, how it ties into the third act and all that. Like it worked for me. So CGI, yeah, I think they dropped the ball on some of that. We'll talk about that in the rest of the video, but I don't know. I'm so curious as to where the conversation's going to go from here, what's going to happen down below in the chat. because the reactions to the movie are so different. Speaking of different reactions to the film, at both of the screenings of it, I talked to the people there, what they thought about the movie. Here's what others had to say.
So we just got out of seeing The Flash. What'd you think about it?
So I thought it was a really fun time at the movies.
I had a really good time. This was my second time seeing it. Really good movie.
Right. Like, as a longtime DC fan, I couldn't stop smiling throughout the entire movie.
I thought it was a great movie, very enjoyable.
Wasn't really the best.
I like the movie.
This movie's just a big love letter to the DC movies in general.
I loved Ezra Miller as The Flash.
I thought Ezra Miller was great.
I think that Keaton was by far the best part of the movie, and particularly in the Batsuit. I thought he just stole the show.
Yeah. Supergirl, Michael Keaton, really big standouts from the movie. Great ensemble.
I got really emotional with the third act.
It was a lot more emotional than I expected.
It's essentially DC's version of No Way Home, but done a little bit better.
I think it's one of the best stories that the DCU has told.
The plot was a little hard to follow for me with some of the parts in it.
The movie was just kind of random.
Some spotty CGI.
The CGI was a little bit dodgy.
And the animation wasn't really good in some parts.
There were a few things, like the end left me with more questions than answers, though.
What was your favorite part?
Dog.
Overall, I had a really great time.
It was so much fun.
So I had a really good time with it.
The movie just wasn't for me, so I'd give it like a 4.5 out of 10.
I absolutely loved it.
I love it. Go see it.
From there, let's just walk through the movie. It kicks off with a cold open in Gotham, where some dudes, some terrorists, steal some stuff that could potentially wipe out all of Gotham. Batman is on the run trying to catch them and get the virus, and the Flash is sent in to mop up the mess behind them with the infrastructure damage caused by whatever they did. And I, on a just a big idea level, I kind of loved this sequence. That it feels like a cold open to an episode of Justice League or Justice League Unlimited, where you have a Justice League that on a random Tuesday morning might team up to stop terrorists in one of their cities. They have these little isolated little adventures stopping crime, saving the world, one little thing at a time. And you don't actually get that much of this type of behavior in a lot of superhero movies. They're focused so much on stopping big, gigantic villains and sky beams and invasions that we lose just these simple little stories about stopping people stealing a thing. We don't get as many of these types of scenarios in superhero movies as we used to. Like, they almost tried to avoid heroes are the heroes of their city. And so you get this scenario where there's a classic people stole something and they're being chased by a superhero aspect to it. And you've got, oh no, a terrible thing has happened. And the Flash has to save everyone, running parallel to each other. And just watching it, I was like, man, like this is like the DCEU. I wish we could have gotten more of this. That if Justice League had been better received, that they if they didn't burn all their bridges 5-6 years ago, 7 years ago, we could have gotten more movies that feel more integrated with a Justice League that works together a lot more. And you get these little just lived in universe details where we're all in the same universe. And sometimes we team up for just a little bit at the beginning before we go off to have our own little adventures. So big piece of that is the detail everyone's talking about with the cold open, the baby shower, where a hospital collapses. They establish a room filled with babies and the door's stuck. They can't get out. And there's a nurse in there. And then it pours over and you follow these babies out the window and this lady out the window. And Barry has to save them. I thought it was a lot of fun. Like much of the movie, there's some very questionable CGI with the look of some of these babies' faces. But the idea of catastrophe happens and Flash has to go in there and save the day while also trying to find a way to get enough calories in his system. And some of the little ingredients of like, what do you need to do to make sure that babies are safe from being moved by the Flash and everything like that. Just establishing some rules of his force or speed force use. The force is in Star Wars. Speed force is what Barry Allen uses. And little details in there, little sight gags, a falling dog, a baby in a microwave. And then once they save everyone, the lady's freaking out because she assumed she was going to die. And all of a sudden she's standing on the ground. Her heart's still racing. She's still in fear, even though everything's all good. I thought it was a ton of fun. And the movie establishes from the opening scene, this is a movie that can have very heavy comedic tone to it. Like it right out of the gate. We've got this bit with Barry trying to get some food and some calories before his little adventure. So it establishes this is a movie that we can get silly in the middle of our big rescue sequences. So I had a lot of fun with it. And it was funny. And it was something different. And it was a hero just saving normal people. Saving babies as they rain down from the sky. The other side to it is you have Batman chasing some people. It was nice to see a little bit more Batfleck. It's Batfleck, so you got machine guns. Batman shooting machine guns at people. Not my favorite thing for Batman to do, but it is established in this universe that he loves his machine guns. And you get to see him dragged by in a car. You get to see him fight people in the car. You get some little laughs in there. Nice little bit. And I think you also pretty early established that our director here is going a little bit too heavy on everything CGI. So even Batman doing stuff that could be stunt work or something of the, along those lines, it all has this realistic cartoon look to it. I wish that we'd done more practical stuff here, but it fits with the rest of the movie. Like it all looks that way. So you just kind of buy into that look for the whole thing. But stunt work. I like stunt work and watching a real person do a real thing. And we get our final little payoff in here. They go over a bridge. They're about to die. And then a lasso grabs them. It's Wonder Woman for a nice little cameo. Nice to see a little bit more of Gal before she's retired from the role. And fits into this idea of this lived-in DCEU with all of our different heroes here that save the day. It's, once again, like our little Justice League intro to the film. Nice little detail. We repeat the Justice League joke about the lasso of truth causing our Justice League members to say things they wouldn't otherwise say at moments where it kind of breaks the tension. And so Batman talks about his how his ego won't allow him to thank other people. You know, it's a fine joke that in Justice League, I thought that was one of the funnier bits in that movie. We're copying the joke here, and it's still kind of fun. Still kind of, it's an easy joke. It's low-hanging fruit, but puts a smile on my face. From there, we start to establish what the main story of our movie is, where Barry's dad is in prison for murdering his mother. Barry staunchly believes that his father is innocent. And through some different things, it's been established that his father, the only reason he wasn't at home to potentially run off the killer guy or scare off the murderer person was that he went to go get this one can of tomatoes. And because he didn't look up, he's not on the surveillance camera that Wayne Tech has been able to clear up. So it's like this one little thing, one little detail, a can on the wrong shelf has led to this scenario where the mother died as well as his father has been in jail for now almost 20 years and his appeal isn't going to go through. So Barry starts thinking through like all of this, accidentally runs into the past, realizes that he's even more powerful than he thought. And he gets this idea in his head, what if I go back in time? And he talks to Bruce Wayne about it. And Bruce is like, you don't want to do that. Because if you interact with yourself, you do anything, you mess with time too much and you break it. So Barry starts thinking, I can't save my mother. I can't go into the kitchen and knock the attacker out. I can't do that. That's too much. But what's a subtle thing that I can do? How do I just make things play out a little bit different? I'm not really interacting with much, just one little thing. What if I put the can of tomatoes in her cart earlier in the day when she went shopping? If she just didn't forget it, dad doesn't leave, and the set of things doesn't unfold. I save her life. I keep my father out of prison. And it's kind of interesting because it's like very much playing on this idea of like small things have such big, gigantic effects on our life. And you can even just stop and think about your own life of little moments where one little choice, one little change makes all the difference. And he narrows it down to one can on one specific shelf. What if I make a little change? So he goes back in time, puts the can into her cart, and he starts running back through time, and he starts seeing memories that he didn't have before. And see, changes everything. And so we'll pause right here even before we get knocked into the wrong timeline. But even in this little bit right here, we have to talk about our visual effects. So one of the things in the movie that... or the big thing everyone's talking about, the VFX don't look good. And I feel like they didn't, with so many of the VFX, they didn't figure out how to visualize these big ideas that are really important for this particular movie. How do you visualize Barry running really fast in a way that's interesting and that looks like it's based in a reality? And then how do you visualize the Speed Force perspective on time? And when it comes to just him using his speed and running, they first introduce his speed with this shot of him like going into a pose, and then it does like almost like the vertigo effect where it kind of does the stretching camera thing. And I went, oh, this looks really cool. And then he starts running. And his path from Central City to Gotham, it just looks like he's floating on the ground when he's running. It doesn't feel like a real person is in, like engaging with the ground, and there's traction and his foot pushing the ground pushes him forward. It just feels like he's gliding across everything. And maybe that's their own idea of the Speed Force, and it's not a person digging into the ground, projecting, giving him a trajectory and pushing him forward. But it just starts to look silly. It looks like a guy on a green screen or just a CGI person moving in a running motion and then just being floating on top of the ground very quickly. I don't think it was the right way to go. They didn't find the right way to visualize a person moving at tremendous speed that feels like they're actually engaging with the world around them. He's just floating through it very quickly. Like I said, maybe that was their idea of like, okay, he's in the Speed Force, so he's slowing things down. It's very different for him, but it just doesn't look right. It looks like he's separate from reality. And then when you get to this time Speed Force, the idea of kind of this Colosseum of past where he's looking out and you just see time behind him and different scenarios, the different options. I think on the one hand, they visualized it really well in the sense that as soon as he runs into it, you immediately understand what you're seeing. Like he runs into it and you see time and different images lining up, spreading out, and you get it. That's a good sign. They were able to visually capture a fairly complex idea of a person traveling back in time with different options in front of them. And they visualized it. But then as soon as you look at any one image, it looks low res. And the director has said that was intentional. Right, it's Barry's perspective that he's going into the Speed Force. And so he's not seeing crystal clear images. He's seeing kind of these distorted with weird coloring, weird, because it's not a person in a space, it's Barry's perspective on time. And I read that and I go, sure, but you have to be able to find something that both captures that concept of it's not reality, it's his perspective on time, that also doesn't look stupid and cheap. If we're watching it and everyone goes, why does that look like a PlayStation 2, PlayStation 3 cutscene? You failed. Because it doesn't look like a believable thing. It looks like an unfinished rendering. It looks like a low-res image. And I don't know what they needed to do, if that needed to be like, as he sees the images, it's like a face. It's, you see it, but it like kind of clouds out and gradiate, that colors turn into this fog, the way that memories in your head, you kind of see his image, but it's kind of foggy around it. So maybe it needed to have like this, like image, like an image that at the point of it is clear. And as it pulls backwards, it turns into a fog, a cloud, something like that, and blends into the next moment in the past, blends into the next variation, maybe something like that. My buddy Griffin, film speak, he said maybe if you're going to show a Colosseum, maybe really go all out and have the images are very stylized and they look like actual statues of the past, and they're these pivotal moments that are look artistic, like artistic renderings. I'm not sure what it needed to be, but just doing a low res image that looks like a video game cutscene from decades past, I think it failed. Because it, you looked at it and you went, ooh, that doesn't look good. That doesn't look real. But it doesn't look artistic. It doesn't look stylized. It's just the wrong blend of a real person, a real image that's clearly not meant to look photorealistic, but without a style, without a distinct creative vibe to it. So it just looks not great. And the video game cutscenes is never the point of reference you want for your movie, especially your $200 million movie. And so when your movie costs that much, the issue is not that you didn't have the resources to pull it off. And because they were test screening this movie a year ago, it's not that they didn't have the time. They just didn't have the right idea on how to stylistically visualize time. They almost did. The Colosseum, I think, was the right idea because we understood it immediately, but they didn't. The individual images just look low res. Likewise, running, it just looks like a guy floating really quickly with lightning around him. They needed a better idea on how to visualize some of that stuff. So Barry's trying to get back to the normal timeline. He's very happy that he's seeing these images with his mother when he was older than when she died. And then someone comes along who looks super evil and boop, knocks him out of the Speed Force and he falls onto the street. Very quickly, he realizes that he's with his mother, but exactly what year is it? It's a little bit unclear as to what's going on here. He looks outside and there's another version of Barry, and we quickly realize we're 10 years in the past. This is young Barry and we're in the wrong time period. Evil Flash guy or evil Speed person knocked Barry out into the wrong point in time. But why? What's kind of going on here? And I didn't know exactly what to make of what I was seeing in the trailers. I didn't get into a whole bunch of fan theories trying to guess, piece things together. Or, you know, sometimes I intentionally try to not stop and think about what I'm seeing in the trailers and piece it together. So my brain hadn't leapt to the idea that this was taking place 10 years in the past. Probably should have been obvious since we're in Man of Steel, so that's a pretty obvious interpretation. But when you show two Barrys and 18-year-old Barry looks an awful lot like 28-year-old Barry, I didn't immediately leap to that. I probably should have, but my brain was more paying attention to the fact that one of our two Barrys is wearing yellow. So I'm going, okay, is that going to be Reverse Flash who's responsible for stuff going on? Like, that's where my brain was kind of going with a lot of the stuff. I'm assuming it's Reverse Flash who messed things up. So then Zod shows up at a different moment in time. But I suppose I should have assumed it was just used at a different point in time, so there's a different Barry for that reason. I didn't put it together. I don't know how many, if other people did. But creates this scenario where we've now gone back in time to the first movie of the DCEU, and we're kind of seeing those events from a different perspective. It's a different timeline, but we are all also kind of seeing the events from a different perspective of 18-year-old Barry. And we realize that Barry doesn't have his powers yet, so they kind of go through this whole scenario where old Barry takes young Barry to the lab. And there's just a lot of humor that comes along with all of this, and it worked for me. Like, I found annoying Barry funny. He's annoying in a way that amused me. I could see why it would be too much for some people. It worked for me. I was laughing at all the shenanigans. And the scenario plays out to where, in the effort to give young Barry his powers, old Barry accidentally transfers his powers to young Barry. That continues to further complicate everything kind of going on here. So we have two Barrys in the timeline messing things up. Old Barry is like, oh man, I need to make sure he gets his powers. And he just complicates things much worse. Thus doing all the stuff that Batfleck was saying, like, you go back in time, you'll start messing stuff up. It's going to be a train wreck if you do this. Like, don't do it. So accidentally transfers his powers to young Barry. This leads to a bunch of funny scenarios, him running into the wall, him running in the lobby, and then young Barry getting his powers and behaving like an 18-year-old that suddenly is super fast. It worked for me. There's a lot of people saying there's too much comedy. I was laughing. I'm okay with it. You have a character that's awkward and goofy, and awkward and goofy characters do awkward and goofy things when they have powers, when they lose powers, and it fits. Barry's has tragedy in there, but he's also a character that has levity to him. So, this is not the Dark Knight. So it's okay if we have a bunch of comedy in here. So fit for me to do all of that stuff. And it leads to the scenario where he's talking with his roommates, and old Barry realizes, oh crap, I seriously screwed up the timeline because Eric Stoltz is Eric Stoltz is Marty McFly, not Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future. And I thought that was just such a fun little joke and an in-joke to kind of pull people into the joke. So if you're an insider on Back to the Future, you really know that what they're referring to is Eric Stoltz was originally cast as Marty McFly in Back to the Future. They shot for a month and then they fired Eric Stoltz because he just didn't have the right energy for the film. Bring in Michael J. Fox, and there's footage out there of Eric Stoltz in the movie and deleted scenes. And there's a couple shots in the movie where it is Eric Stoltz. One of the very famous alternative versions of a movie that almost happened. One of the most famous recasts mid-production of all time, because the movie went on to be so successful and people love Michael J. Fox in that role. And they make that a joke about an alternate timeline. I loved that. And then they really played out with people with tattoos. And then they really lean into it about Kevin Bacon and who's in Footloose, who's in Top Gun. All of it just fun, deep cut for movie fans. All of it worked for me. And they realize, oh crap, there's no superheroes. They start doing research trying to crack the code of who's out there. And they realize, it's just the Flash. Like, he screwed things up. But then they realize there is still a Batman out there. There is a Batman, but who is this Batman? And they go to meet Batman. And that'll bring us to the return of Michael Keaton as Batman. They sneak into Wayne Manor, go into one of the small kitchens where some food is being prepped, and someone attacks them, and our young Flash with speed powers able to avoid the attacks, but old Barry Allen keeps getting beaten up by the old man. And it's soon to be revealed that this is a Bruce Wayne who's become a recluse, who apparently cooks food for himself in his very run-down home. Throughout the course of the little get-together, you realize that in this timeline, Gotham has become a safe city. And I had some conversations with people after the movie where they're like, I'm not sure that I like the idea of I wasn't fully bought into the idea of a Bruce Wayne that is kind of turned into this guy that's just at his home. Like, they didn't explain enough what's kind of going on there. And I go, and I think they did. It's subtle. It's not entirely like overtly stated, but as soon as you stop and think about it, if Bruce Wayne is driven entirely to save Gotham, to prevent others from facing the pain that he faced as a child, and Gotham becomes safe and he's no longer needed. He's defined his life based off of being Batman, being this hero, and the hero's not needed. And it's in a world where there aren't the other metahumans creating the Justice League to where he's working with others. So what does he do for the rest of his life once he's saved Gotham? So I think it's implied in there. That makes sense. But as someone that grew up with Michael Keaton Batman, just seeing him again, the little notes, the location, the brief little objects, it's just cool. In the same way that seeing Toby, seeing Andrew Garfield was so cool for many of you, for some of us that are a little bit older, that's what this was. Like, he's back, we're back. And even looking at the reactions over the last 24 hours, we don't have a ton to like go off of just yet, because it's the movie released in theaters 24 hours ago. There's a lot of people, you know, No Way Home's better, this one's better, this is all that bickering, of course, that's what we nerds do on the internet. But I wonder how much the impact of No Way Home even ties into, they got people excited about the movie without spoiling overtly that Toby and Andrew were in the film. They kept it a secret. So then you're watching the movie, and it was Hollywood's worst kept secret. We knew they were going to show up, but we hadn't seen it. Not one for actual real video clip of them. Some leaked images, some ones with the Campia watermark on them and stuff like that. Like, there were images out there, but there wasn't an official thing. No official confirmation. And then we're in the theater, takes the mask off, and it's Andrew Garfield. And he's so what if this same movie, they were able to find a way to market it, get people excited to go check it out, but they didn't reveal that you're going to see Michael Keaton. It's implied, like, wait a minute, is that what they're going with this? And you're in the theater. I wonder how much the specialness, just the great memories, the way people like praise No Way Home, is just because it was special to see them again, but they actually let it be a surprise in the theater. And when it came to this movie, I mean, the two iconic lines, I'm Batman. You want to get nuts? Let's get nuts. Like, they put it in the trailer. Those were the two moments that at my fan screening, people were like, yeah, with him. And they were in the trailer. So what would this movie have been if it was actually like, wow, and they surprised us? I would have liked to have seen that. That would have been cool. So then Barry is trying to piece together his own little Justice League to stop Zod, whatever they need to do to Zod. And they realize it looks like our Kryptonian has been taken by Russians. And this little plot beat, it's a spin on something from Flashpoint. Really, a lot of this is very, very much pulled from Flashpoint, where in the Flashpoint novel and the Flashpoint Paradox film, that's a direct translation of the comic run into an animated movie, Barry breaks the timeline, but now it's Thomas Wayne who is Batman instead of Bruce Wayne. Bruce died, Thomas becomes Batman, and so he's a much angrier version of the character. They didn't decide to go down that path. They decided to do kind of our multiverse fun, so we get Michael Keaton. And then in that, once again, our Kryptonian is taken captive, and so they have to go and try and rescue the Kryptonian. But they're in the Flashpoint stories, the actual Flashpoint ones, it's Kal-El, and he's never interacted with a person, so he's like, he's frail, he's weak, and his mind is mush, essentially. So they try to do a version of that without that ties into, let's do multiverse, let's tie into Man of Steel. And so how do we kind of pull some of this stuff together? We'll be at a different point in time. So we have two Barrys, and we can re-explore some events from Man of Steel. But how do we put a spin on it? So the spin is, there's what happens in Man of Steel if there's no Superman? So they continue to play that out. So it's not just Superman doesn't show up. They go to rescue him, and it's not him. It's someone else. So they once again play into a little detail, both in the comic lore as well as in the details of Man of Steel, where there's the crashed ship at the beginning of Man of Steel. There's dead bodies, and like you see some stuff. There's an empty tube, and you're like, what does all this mean? What's the implications of all of this? And so there's always kind of this implication of what did happen to Supergirl. There's always kind of in there, and now we play it out a little bit different of she made it, Kal-El didn't. Through all of this, you get to see Michael Keaton in the suit being Batman again. And it's cool. With more modern aesthetics, modern fight choreography and things like that. So it just gets more vibrant and some cool stuff they're able to do. More little references and Easter eggs and everything. Just makes for a fun time. And they escape to the roof barely. They're captured and they're able to get Supergirl into the sun. So sun powers her up and she wipes out the Russians and they escape. So we kind of get to the point in time where they're trying to prep for what they're going to do to battle Zod. Supergirl, Kara, doesn't want to help them. She's been treated horribly by humans, so she's not necessarily looking to help them. She wants to, okay, let me hear from Zod. Let me check this out. And she's not mad at Barry and Batman, but they're not her people. Zod is her people, so let me go check this out. So she flies over, and we kind of see a little bit of a recreation of events from Man of Steel, except Zod just starts killing people. And she sees that and immediately goes, wait, that's not our way. That's not what I was thinking. Okay, I understand now why they want to stop Zod. I'm not down for that. She goes back. But while they were doing this, old Barry's like, I got to get my powers back. And so then they repeat a beat once again from Flashpoint. And this is going through the movie when they, I didn't pay too much attention to the trailers in terms of like trying to piece it together. I wasn't looking for frames to like what was pulled from Flashpoint. I wanted to be as surprised as possible. So like I watched the trailers, then I kind of stopped watching them intentionally to give my brain 2 months to forget what I saw. So if I'd done that, I probably could have pieced together that there was a lot more Flashpoint in the movie than I was expecting. But I was very pleasantly surprised to see we've got alternate take on Batman, who's older. We've got the rescue of a Kryptonian who's weak and they've been in this tube thing forever. And then we have Barry telling Batman, hey, why don't you douse me with chemicals and electrocute me so maybe I can get my powers back? And having them have to do a couple batches, that's in Flashpoint. That's like Barry gets super jacked up and is like, yeah, give it another round. This has got to work. And so I was totally down for all of that. And through all of it, our new little Justice League is created. And they give, I've heard some people say that, you know, Supergirl, Batman don't really have arcs. They don't have a lot of depth to them. They're just kind of more there as stand-ins to be someone that Barry interacts with. First off, it is called The Flash. There's a very clear arc for our lead character. There's very obviously, there's a journey. There's something he's learning that integrates very much into the plot. So I think there's a side to it of, I understand why you want someone like Batman to be big and important in the film. There's a flip side to it of like, you can't give everyone a big, gigantic arc. Yet he's only a side character. And he's a side character that's not introduced until about halfway through the film. Like, I don't know the exact time length, but pretty sure you're over an hour into the movie before Michael Keaton Batman shows up. And he has a little bit of a journey that he's on. When he's first said, will you help us? He goes, pass. I'm not going to do this. I've already saved my city. This is, I'm out. One room in my place, but I'm out. And he slowly pulled back and like, okay, I'll help you. I'll just do this. I'll help you get Superman. Okay. Need some help electrocuting? Okay, let's do it. Okay. And then he's kind of pulled through this. And as we get into the final battle, you start talking more about more where he's like, I can't bring you back. Can I? And he goes, we already did. You already did, man. And it's just that arc journey of Batman's back. You did it. You got him out of his funk of directionlessness, reminded himself that he's a hero, that he can still be the hero and still save the day. He's got a little journey in there. Likewise, Supergirl, she's brought in the movie even further into it. She's brought in, 60, 70% of the way through the movie, she's introduced, and then she's not even in the last 20 minutes of the film. So she's not a major part of this film. She serves a purpose, but she's not a major part. And she has just a little bit of a journey of, you guys are good, you saved me, but humans, I don't trust. Those are my people. That is not the Kryptonian way. That Zod is not. That is not who we are. There's something there. Keep him, like, it's Supergirl. You're finally getting into DCE. You want it to be bigger, more ambitious. She's a side character. That's all she is. She's a side character. So I don't know why it would be this gigantic thing. I wish she had more to do in the film, but I think for the way she's used, it made sense to me. So some of the things where people are like, oh, why didn't Batman have more of an arc? He's just kind of there to guide Barry. Or right. He's the mentor role in the film. You know, what was Obi-Wan Kenobi's arc in Star Wars? We don't really have, like, his arc is he's guiding Luke on this journey and taking him on the Avenger, but he's the mentor. He's the guide that's brought in to help our hero be who our hero needs to be. It's weird to see Batman in that role because Batman, of course, is a more prominent hero than the Flash is, but this is the Flash's movie. That'll bring us to our final battle where they go up against the Kryptonians, and there's a lot of little fun details in here of seeing two Flashes working together, learning their powers. Doesn't necessarily look great. It looks very cartoony, but there's fun to be had in just seeing them do that. The Flash's involvement in the final battle of the Flash are the weakest aspects. That's not a good sign when it's your movie and everyone else's stuff is kind of cooler. That's not great. It doesn't necessarily bother me per se because of what the movie's actually trying to do. I enjoyed it enough, but seeing Supergirl, her reaction to Zod, that's much more compelling because she's emotionally driven and for good length measures, as well as being compromised because of just acting viciously rather than strategically. But there's something about watching her tear up Zod, which is very enjoyable. Likewise, watching Michael Keaton in the Batwing again, tearing up a bunch of ships and using his ingenuity to try and smash things together. Him being a little bit cocky and foolish in some of the stuff that he does in this context of just like, we're going to war, let's do this. And like, all right, we're going crazy, we're going nuts. I don't know if we can win this thing, so let's just go for it. We got to go bigger and go home. And see him kind of go for it. Feels like, you know, classic intense Batman in a no-win scenario. So there's a bunch of fun little elements in there. But the purpose of the third act is to teach old Barry this was never meant to be. Some problems you can't solve. And this world wasn't meant to exist like this. This timeline wasn't meant to exist like this. And no matter what you do, it's doomed. And so you watch Michael Keaton, Batman die. You watch Supergirl die and they fail. And they go back to try and fix it. And you have a lot of movies that time travel is frequently used to like fix the past. Like what can we'll go back, we'll fix it. Oh, let's just go back. And there's something kind of refreshing about a movie that goes, some things are meant to be, and you can't fix everything. You can't just keep going back. Something refreshing about that. And that's the message that Barry needed to learn, that Batfleck was telling him at the beginning of, like, these wounds make you who you are. Like, you need some of your wounds. You're not broken. You don't need to be fixed. You just need to move forward from some of the stuff. And so then we get to this moment where he starts to piece that together. Oh, this is the spaghetti mush. We're trying to chaotically fix something that wasn't supposed to ever exist. This was not supposed to happen. It wasn't supposed to be this way. And it's also kind of refreshing to have a final battle that our heroes lose. There is a side to it that feels like, wait, did this stuff not matter? In a sense, yes. In a sense, our efforts to get Supergirl to bring Flash's powers back so that we could win this fight, that was pointless in the sense that we weren't meant to win this fight. But it served the purpose of teaching Barry the lesson. And if that's what the movie's about, it's a very interesting, subversive way to do a third act and to do a climax, which is it's not about winning. It's not about figuring it out. It's about learning and growing, which is what storytelling is. You have a character that faces a conflict and they grow and change through trying to process through that conflict, and they have something that is desire. Either they get it or they don't get it, but they learn along the way. And depending on what they learned along the way is whether it's a happy ending or a tragic ending. Sometimes you have bittersweet endings, but it's all about this person working through conflict and growing and changing along the way. And frequently, most comic book movies about, we need to beat that bad guy over there. And then they beat the bad guy. And this one, it's not about beating the bad guy. And the villain in the movie ultimately isn't Zod. It's that internal desire to try and fix everything. And there's a lesson that has to be learned there. And so then we kind of move into a scenario where we get our ultimate manifestation of this, of literally the villain is a version of the Flash that never learned that lesson. And it's built off of, once again, the lesson from the beginning, which is our scars make us who we are. Old Barry is a better Flash because of the trauma he's faced and the loss that he's faced and the lessons he's learned because of it. And young Barry hasn't learned that yet. He hasn't faced the pain. Therefore, he's much more processing through it that leads to that evil Flash that's stuck in that eternal loop of trying to fix something that's not fixable and everything that comes with the destruction that comes with that. He hasn't learned the lesson. He wasn't shaped by the pain. Therefore, he has the power, but without the maturity required to handle the power. It's the ultimate it's a visible manifestation of the internal conflict of the movie. That's our villain. The character arc, the journey Barry's on, is the villain. That's interesting. It's different. I can get why it would be unsatisfying. I can get why people would want something different. You know, my son, talking with him afterwards, he's 11. More straightforward take on things. He's like, I don't think we needed to go back to Man of Steel. I don't think we needed Zod. Just make the evil Flash. Make him chasing Barry around for breaking the timeline. All right. Yeah, maybe so. They tried something different. When you do something different, generally speaking, some people go, that was cool. That was interesting. That was different. And a lot of people will go, yikes, that didn't work. And of course, you've got to talk about Cameo-palooza. So while we are in the middle of Barry's crisis of time, where young Barry desperately wants to fix things and is not realizing that this is infixable, old Barry has realized, I need to go back and allow things to play out the way they were meant to be. My mother wasn't meant to be saved. I have to undo what I did and let my mother die. And for him, he's felt that pain his whole life. Young Barry has never felt that. And so it's a choice. Like for old Barry, that's what was meant to be. And he tried to change what was meant to be. For young Barry, that's not what happened. That's not what was meant to be. It's a much harder choice. But in that chaos, multiverse tearing apart, and they do this fun little bit where we start to see these other realms. And this is the part of the movie that got all kinds of different reactions, where some people found it in poor taste, other people found it awesome. There's more questionable, spotty CGI in here. But we see the multiverse, and it's going through George Reeves, Superman and the Mole Men, 70 years ago. We're seeing Adam West, Batman. And then we pull up, and they do a CGI rendition of Christopher Reeves and Helen Slater as Supergirl. And I had someone ask me in a live stream a few weeks back, like, how would you respond if they did CGI Christopher Reeves? And I was like, I don't know if that'll work. I don't know if you can pull, like, what you can do with that that feels earned, that doesn't feel like weird, creepy, gross. I don't know. Seen the movie twice, and I think it was pretty cool. I think they didn't try to create a full performance. They didn't try to have him say things. They didn't overdo it and have him join in. They just showed the multiverses colliding, and people, we get to glimpse into them, and they just showed a version of him. You think we, Ghostbusters Afterlife, a couple years back, we had Harold Ramis shooting a proton pack at a ghost, like joining in. Much more of a performance of sorts. This is just him there with Helen Slater. Of course, it's people are taking much bigger issue with Christopher Reeves because he died. And of course, even 10 years before he died, he'd been in a wheelchair. And so they're very much bringing back someone that has actually died. And there's something to that, that for many people, it just doesn't feel right to bring back a dead person in with computers. I get that. Like, if that's where you're coming from, that's fair. At some people, it feels like they're just playing that as a card to, like, own the movie or something, because they're just rooting against it. Like, if you didn't feel that way about Harold Ramis, but you're really mad about this movie, feels like we got some double standards there. Seeing it in the film, it worked for me. And I appreciate that they had Helen Slater there too. That Supergirl's not a beloved film at all, but they didn't try and ignore it. And I like that. And then they turn and we see Superman battling a gigantic metal spider. A robot spider. And as soon as I saw that, wait a minute, are they doing this? Is this really happening? And he turns around and it's Nicolas Cage as Superman. Now, most of you watching this almost certainly know what this is a reference to, but back in the late 90s, Nicolas Cage was hired to play Superman in a movie called Superman Lives that Tim Burton was putting together, and they worked on it for a long time. It almost happened and then it fell through. John Schnepp made a documentary about it. I was actually a Kickstarter for it. You can see my name in the credits for the John Schnepp, The Death of Superman Lives, What Happened. My name is in the credits because I was a early backer at a pretty high level, enough, or at least high enough of a level to get my name in the credits. And one of the most famous stories about this movie that Kevin Smith has shared many times is that the producer, John Peters, who was actually played by Bradley Cooper in the movie Licorice Pizza, he wanted Superman to fight a big, gigantic robot spider. That was like his demand. That has to happen in the movie. And then when the movie didn't happen, they put that same robotic spider in Wild Wild West. You watch Wild Wild West, why is there a big, gigantic metal spider thing in it that Kenneth Branagh's driving around? Because the producer wanted that in Superman Lives. And they did it. They actually had Nicolas Cage as Superman That was cool. That was really fun that they did that. There's like Jay Garrick in there and a bunch of other ones. There's like little glimpses and you go, that was cool. They actually did that. But like the rest of the CGI in the movie, it doesn't look great. And so when you see CGI Nicolas Cage and you go, Nicolas Cage is right over there, and I'm sure he would have told you yes to be in it and just film him. And it looks like a low res version of him. It's weird. Like that was their idea on how to visualize the fact that it's not quite reality. It's a perspective from the Speed Force. So it's not crystal clear. So we'll make it look like a cutscene. Not a great idea. Not the right way to go, unfortunately. So once again, they did something that was like, that was so cool. Why does it look like that though? So I dug it. And there are people like, oh, you know, the cameos were way over the top. And the cameos felt forced. It's like 10 seconds of the movie. It's like 30 seconds of the movie. If you put this whole, like watching these worlds spinning and colliding, this is not the central idea. It's not the whole thing. And 2 weeks ago, everyone was perfectly fine that we're walking around Multiverse Central and we've just got cameos sitting in a tube. People are watching cameos on a TV. Everywhere you go, there's a cameo for something. But in this one, you literally see worlds colliding and like, oh, that's too far. I mean, if you didn't buy into the movie and therefore you're annoyed because this doesn't work for you, I think some of that I can go, okay, if you're not buying into the movie, you don't buy into the details of the movie. That's the way that works. Okay, sure, fair. But suggesting that this is too much, but Donald Glover in a tube and across the Spider-Verse is okay, that seems like we've got, once again, double standards. Anyway, as we're in our multiverse tunnel deal, evil old Flash goes to kill his hero. Old Flash. Too many Flashes now. Goes to kill him. And young, non-evil Flash runs in front of him to save him. I think if you dive into, like, I'd love to hear spoiler interview where the director starts to explain exactly what the logic was with the creation of all of this. How does it actually work that it came into existence, then that one would be good, not allowing the other? Like, what's the thought there besides time's nonlinear? So as soon as Barry opened things up, he created this paradox. Like, you kind of want a better explanation. Just time paradox, time isn't linear. So as soon as you, like, yeah, it just happened, like, because it's all at once. It's not the most satisfying of answers to just suggest that time is nonlinear to justify a paradox with no actual origin point. Young Barry kills old young evil Barry. No, excuse me, is killed by old young evil Barry to save old good Barry. And he kind of learned just enough of a lesson from old Barry to not become the worst version of himself. But yet somehow that other one still kind of existed in some sense. Their time rules are unclear. So our main Barry goes back to the shopping mall, superstore, and says goodbye to his mother. I saw a lot of people saying the movie was emotionally empty and it didn't have a heart. I don't know. That's what's fascinating about this one in particular. It just feels like there's such dramatically different reads where a bunch of us watch it. That was surprisingly emotional. That was really heartfelt. Like, it's funny, but then it pauses to have these really heavy moments. And then other people watching it, all that stuff fell flat. I didn't buy into it. I didn't care at all for the stuff with his mother. I watched it, and every time, like, that really big, heavy emotions about the loss of a parent, saying goodbye and having to let go, having the power to do something different, but knowing you can't make that's the wrong choice. It's not meant to be, so having to let go. thought it was profound, powerful. Others thought it was hollow and empty. And then as he's saying goodbye, he makes one more change. And then someone messaged me, does this immediately undo the message of the whole film? Like, he just learned you have to let go. And then he makes a choice to make another change to save his other parent in a different way, making an even more subtle change, a change that doesn't have nearly as big of ramifications. It's just to say that his dad does this. Just changes this, setting up our final courtroom scene where now his dad looks up, so his dad is cleared. And I'm sure they put that in there to have like one final little clever little twist, and also ends on a happy ending. Say that his mother was meant to die, but that doesn't mean that his dad was meant to be in prison forever. And I think there can be truth to that. Does it mean that Barry didn't fully learn the lesson? I think it clearly does. That he learned to let go of his mother. That I can't fix that. But it doesn't mean he's not letting go of trying to fix other things. I don't know how contradictory of a message that is. Because some of that's built into being a hero, is you're trying to save people. Say, okay, I can't fix this problem about my mother, but can I still fix my dad? Can I still save my dad? Because it's not even stopping him from being accused, stopping him from being arrested, just at my literal point in time where he's at, I just need a video of him doing this. I don't know. You know, it's clearly he still changed something. It's not quite as impactful. Did he not learn? Interesting. But, as made clear before, our whole line of thinking of, hey, this is a smaller change. It doesn't change things in the past. It changes it in the present. Therefore, he did this little thing. So over here, it lets his father, clears his father in present, doesn't change all this stuff in the middle. True, but Michael Keaton made it clear that is not how our rules work, because it's not that you change something here and it makes a difference over here, because we just decided time is not linear. So you create a fulcrum. So still, if you move the cans up here, it's a fulcrum. It's a new line. It's a change of everything, thus leading to our final reveal of the film, that we walk outside. Bruce Wayne gets out of his vehicle. George Clooney gets out. Got a huge reaction, both theaters I was in. Big, surprising, unexpected. Also what are you implying here? What does this mean? Not helped by the fact that they've been real unclear about the future of the DCU. And is this resetting the universe? Is this the new... All this stuff that... And some of that's people assuming things. Some of that's things they have said publicly about these movies. But it ends with George Clooney as Batman, which is a hilarious joke since he's in the most hated Batman movie. And now he is the DCEU Batman and Barry doesn't even know who he is. It's pretty funny. I wonder how all of this was meant to play out exactly. Like, what was the original ending to the film? What are the scenes that have been lost? Since Michael Keaton was supposed to be in Batgirl. He's in Batgirl, the movie that we're never going to see. So this movie, I'm pretty sure, is supposed to end. And the change is, it's Michael Keaton. He's now DCEU Batman. And so you get Batgirl, and it's not Batfleck. It's Michael Keaton. Change things around. Interesting. Wow. How's this all going to play out? Then they decide not to do the future of the DCEU. We're not going to do Batgirl. We are going to do this whole other thing. So now what are we going to do in our movie? Instead of ending it with some sort of twist thing that brings over the character from the other timeline, we end it with a joke. A funny joke. One that definitely gets a reaction, but what does it really mean? What's the real implication of all? Like, where is this just a joke? Pretty sure it's just a joke. It's not going anywhere. It doesn't mean anything because this universe is coming to a close and being reset by James Gunn in a way that's kind of confusing, since after Superman Legacy, he's going to do Peacemaker Season 2. How does that fit and make sense? I don't know. That's why many of us are confused. And I think that's also why some people aren't as excited about this movie. Because you can do something like, I guess we'll just end in George Clooney's Batman. Well, what a fun bit. But it doesn't mean anything. And if the end of your movie doesn't mean anything, that George Clooney as Batman doesn't mean anything, it's just funny. What does that say about the significance of your film? The weight of your film? That's not good. That is the problem with Warner Brothers and DC right now. That crisis of what are we doing here? What's the future of it all? And then they decide to end on an even weirder note with this post-credits scene where they brought Jason Momoa in. Like Jason Momoa, like, hey, he comes in, we're going to shoot a scene. And instead of doing anything, it's like Aquaman's drunk. Barry's trying to tell him about the multiverse. And then he decides to sleep in a puddle. What? This is a weird. I just don't understand. If you're going to do a post-credit scene like this, if you get Jason Momoa, why wouldn't you do something more meaningful than whatever this is? So I thought this was weird. I thought it was a strange choice. It's a weird joke that felt like such a waste. There you have it. There's my spoiler thoughts on The Flash. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I had a blast with it. There's some odd choices in there, in particular with the CGI that I wish they had just handled differently. But on a story level, I liked the Flashpoint story. I thought this was a good way to integrate it in with the DCEU as well as doing a multiverse story. I enjoyed the cast. I thought they were a lot of fun. So I'm legitimately kind of confused by how much some people are disliking this film. I'm very surprised by that. So maybe some of you in the comment section can explain it to me. How much of it is just multiverse exhaustion? How much of it is Across the Spider-Verse was 2 weeks ago and people loved that one and they're just similar enough and we're just kind of like the Ezra Miller situation and as well as just kind of DC, what's going on that just made this movie just feel like, why are we doing this again? Haven't we already done this? I don't know. I dug it. Seen it twice. Really dug it both times. Most of the people I watched it with really dug the film. Let me know what you thought down below. Thank you so much for watching. Keep talking movies and TV too much. Bye-bye.